Welcome to the Seongspo Energy Podcast. I'm Youngsun Om, and I have Haemi Bahar joining me today to give us an insight on hydropower. Haemi is a senior analyst at the International Energy Agency and the lead author of the Renewables Market Report. He also teaches at Seongspo on the role of hydro in clean energy transitions. Today, we will discuss current issues related to hydropower and its implications in decarbonization around the world, and what measures can be taken to unlock its potential. Hello, Haemi.
Hello.
Thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here.
So before we start, could you briefly introduce yourself and your work at the IEA?
Of course. So my name is Haemi Bahar. As mentioned, at the IEA, I'm responsible for the agency's work on renewable energy markets and policies. This involves a short and medium-term forecast for renewable energy, electricity, heat, and transport, which means all the sectors, but also I'm managing the work related to the policy engagement with countries, especially with emerging economies. But after the Russia's invasion of Ukraine, IEA also extensively supports European Union on several issues to accelerate deployment. So I'm basically responsible for this work at the IEA.
Yep, very important work and interesting as well. Let's dive into the topic of hydropower. So I found out that hydro is one of the oldest and largest sources of renewable energy and has supplied 1/6 of global power generation in 2020. So I was wondering, what are some different types of hydro plants and can they be installed anywhere or do they need some certain geographical requirements?
So you are making a very important point. It is one of the oldest electricity generation technologies. Indeed, it's the oldest one, probably, in a commercial scale, starting from something like, I think, 1883, the first hydropower was being installed in the United States. And the types of hydropower, there are multiple hybrid types, but if you want to categorize them in three main categories, one will be runoff river hydropower. The main topic is, as is mentioned in the name, is on a river, which is usually done by a diversion of the water and then generating power out of it. And it doesn't have large-scale storage capability. Usually it has, in general, 1 to 2 days, maybe less, storage capability to hold the water on a basin. That's one type, runoff river. The second type is classical reservoir hydropower. We all know dams, which basically store a lot of water and then generate. And the third category is pump storage hydropower. It is usually established in between two different reservoirs or on a river and one higher reservoir. The logic is simple. The water is pumped to the upper reservoir in order to be generated later. It's kind of an electricity battery, but the electricity is stored through the pumping water up and down. These are the three major categories. There are some geographical requirements, of course, to install those. For instance, I mean, for reservoir hydropower, you need to have a geography where you can have the capability of block the water and store it. And for runoff river is less. It's much more diverse because it's on a river of a diversion. It can be installed very small and very large, like in Brazil, or very small, many parts in Africa. And pump storage hydropower is also requires some kind of a hill environment to be able to install because of the differences between upper and lower reservoir. But overall, a lot of countries in the world have the potential still, especially in developing and emerging economies. It's also, geography is important, but also it's important to costs of hydropower, because once geography becomes much more complicated, the cost of investment is increasing. That's why it becomes less and less economical. So that's the overall thing that is that basically a limit in addition to the geographical requirements.
And I've noticed that many countries with low greenhouse gas emissions have high share of hydropower in their grids, for example, like Norway, Brazil, and Canada. So despite this, hydro seems to be less frequent in the decarbonization discussions. So I was wondering what would be the reasons behind this?
So hydro is the largest renewable energy technology today, and it's not talked that much. And the reason behind this is very simple and very complicated. The first simple reason, it's not a sexy topic among others such as solar PV and wind. It's a very old technology, and the community itself is a very kind of a silent community, hydropower community. That's the first reason. The second reason, though, is much more complicated, which means historically, hydropower plants created a lot of controversy during their installation, displacement of the people, permitting, environmental impacts. There has been good and bad practices over the last many decades. And in this time frame, obviously, it got a very sensitive connotation or perception, both by the society and policymakers. That's why, despite all its qualities of being the largest renewable electricity technology, being the most flexible one, and providing a huge amount of storage and dispatchable energy to many communities, also increasing electricity access in many parts of the world, the controversy around its installation and environmental impact has been making policymakers and society a bit shy to talk about it. However, with all the decarbonization goals, it's coming back to the agenda because we need to replace a lot of the flexible and baseload technology, which are fossil fuels, with something. And hydropower can offer some solutions on that sense. Right now, it's becoming more and more of a topic of discussion.
Yes, that actually leads to the next question, which is how can hydro contribute to the clean energy transitions, particularly in line with increasing variable renewable energy sources?
In the end, it's today, compared to battery storage, is the cheapest way of storing energy through the reservoir power plants, but also pump storage. But these are very long-term storage, so the world needs also shorter-term storage, so they need to coexist for the clean energy transitions, because we will have more and more variable renewable energy, such as wind and solar. We need to balance them, we need to integrate them. For this, increasingly, we will need in many countries and many more countries actually from today a flexible source which hydropower can provide. And this will be the key topic in the future. That's why hydropower becomes more and more a topical agenda, even within the European Union, because it's clean energy and dispatchable and flexible and has storage potential. If you combine all of those, it can answer a lot of the problems that future energy system can face with increasing share of wind and solar PV.
It's interesting that you mentioned Europe because there seems to be some regional disparities when it comes to new installations of hydropower. It's more observed that it's decreasing capacity in the developed countries like Europe and North America, while there's more increase in emerging and developing economies. So are there particular reasons behind this?
So the answer of this question is related to untapped potentials, untapped economical potential, let's put it this way. There are a lot of potential in mature economies such as North America and Europe to deploy hydropower. However, the sites which are far away, much more difficult to access, so which means that they are a lot of cost associated with them, and also the permitting and all these risks that I mentioned, public perception and so on and so forth. Developing countries and emerging countries is a huge untapped potential in geographical areas that are relatively easy. And in this case, it provides an opportunity for them to increase electricity access or meet the growing electricity demand that these countries have based on their economic development. So in that sense, the regional disparity is mostly untapped economic potential and the needs of these countries where hydropower can provide a lot of the solutions.
And I'm also guessing in the developed economies, there's already much more hydropower plants that are
It's a very
developed.
mature markets already. They installed between 1940s and 1980s incredible amount of renewable hydropower capacity, which means that they already tapped majority of their potential.
I see.
The next potential is much more expensive to tap.
And I was wondering where would be some locations that we would see a big increase in hydropower in the next decade?
So there are three countries that come to mind. First of all, China. Obviously, China's huge geography and increasing power demand and ambitious decarbonization goals, plus the needs for flexibility because of the rapidly growing wind and solar PV capacity. Obviously, hydropower plays an important role for China. All types of hydropower, including pump storage, which is basically extremely important for the Chinese government to install as rapidly as possible to balance wind and solar PV in certain regions and areas. That's the first one. The second one is India. There's a lot of untapped potential. Again, rapidly growing solar PV capacity, which will require not only storage in 1 to 3 hours, but more than that, hydropower provides a solution in that sense. So there's a lot of activity going on in India. The third one would be Africa. So there are very large plants that are being developed in Africa. Of course, it takes a lot of time to develop them, but Africa is one of the most important markets still for hydropower. Also, adding wind and solar in African economies is very difficult because already existing grid is very weak. So if you add a wind and solar in an already weak grid, it won't work that well. So you need they need a bulk generation which can provide this kind of energy needs, energy access needs. So hydropower is the solution for this. It also creates a lot of economic activity which can stay in these regions. So that's why it's important.
And hydropower is compatible with the currently existing grid?
The fact that hydropower plants are big, you need to build the large grid anyways to evacuate the power. On the other hand, small solar PV plants here and there requires investment, but in order to integrate them, grid is not very stable. But once you have the hydropower and its own grid, it can basically generate stable power.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, so we have seen that hydropower has a lot of potential for decarbonization while securing energy supply, especially for the developing economies. So now let's talk a bit about its challenges. Recently, there have been some concerns around the impact of climate change, notably droughts, affecting hydropower generation, causing multi-year lows. And also with more frequent heat waves, there's been some concerns about vaporization of reservoirs, which seem to be problematic for the water supply in the nearby regions. I was wondering how serious this is and what are some measures to improve the water management in the hydropower plants?
Sure. So it is a very, very important issue, and it's not only on the low side, it can be also sometimes on the high side. The volatility is much larger at this point. Let me give you an example. Last year and this year, Brazilian hydropower generation will hit an incredible record because there is a lot of rain, we are talking about probably 30% increase compared to year on year, which is a huge increase. On the other hand, we are seeing in the first 4 or 5 months in China, 40% decline in hydropower generation. Okay, so these fluctuations are becoming much more drastic in the regions, both up on the and downside. That's one important issue that needs to be mentioned, because upper side may sound good, but it's not always. It also creates a lot of droughts and other issues. So hydropower's role in the future will be much more nuanced in that sense, because if you are building hydropower to meet your growing electricity demand, countries need to plan that if there's a drought 1 year, they won't have this electricity. So energy system needs to be planned this way. That's one layer of complication. The second layer of complication is the water use. In many countries, more and more hydropower plants, it has been also historically, provide a lot of different services. Drinking water, irrigation, drought management, and a lot of other things that are involved in the use of the water in the hydropower reservoir. Electricity always has taken the priority because it's the most revenue that you can generate. However, Now we are seeing more and more interesting issues that are coming up, which means that use of water, how we should prioritize that. Brazil, again, is a very good example. It has always been the electricity that has taken the priority, but now it's more and more other use of water that is being considered. So the future of hydropower is hidden in the how we the water is managed, how it is used, how it is organized around a growing climate change concerns, more and more extreme volatility in the weather conditions, heat waves, and so on and so forth. But could be done. There are good planning systems that, this could happen. But the energy system should not take hydropower for granted as generating over the last 10 years. It will be very different, up and down.
I guess that kind of leads to the next question of wondering what would be some obstacles for hydro project developers. You kind of mentioned about the permitting side. There's huge investment costs for these big dams to be built. So what would be some of the issues for them?
So the main point that I would like to make here, the biggest challenge is the development lead times. It's a general umbrella topic which involves long permitting, long construction, and so on and so forth. So we are racing for the energy transition. 2030 is a very important year to be able to achieve certain deployment of renewable energy, including hydropower in many countries. However, hydropower development timelines are much longer than that. Because of the very complicated and long permitting procedures, water use rights, so on and so forth. On top of that, investment in hydropower is a complicated business case. Even in a condition where hydropower output, electricity output price is attractive, such as in Africa, for instance, building that and putting so much money upfront investment is complicated, including that possible social acceptance issues that can be on the way, which can delay or block the investment. So in that sense, hydropower, with all its benefits, the major challenge is permitting, long lead times, and social acceptance issues, where any large hydropower plant development is currently facing in the world, a social acceptance issue, protest, people moving around, and so on and so forth. However, there are solutions to this, and there are a lot of options that countries can implement. Transparency of development and engagement with the communities is the most important one. There are good practices around that in Costa Rica, in Brazil, and many parts of the world, is that hydropower brings economic development. Yes, it has an environmental impact, but this needs to be weighted with its benefits for the communities, for the society, for environment, for climate change mitigation and adaptation, because it stores water. So I think in that sense, the policymakers, developers and investors need to take this sustainability discussion very seriously and use best practices to be able to develop these other projects.
And you mentioned about the long lead time. On average, how long is it?
A large dam will take from start to finish 10 to 15 years.
Okay. That's pretty long.
It's pretty long, including the permitting and pre-development. Mm-hmm. So the construction is 4 to 6 years. The rest is all, mm-hmm. unless there is a court case, which means everything stops and you wait even.
Mm-hmm. I see. And you briefly mentioned about the profitability of African hydropower plants. If we bring that topic to EU on their current market design, do you think EU should give more incentives to hydropower developers to ramp up its deployment?
Well, so this is a very important point. First of all, the average age of hydropower plants in Europe is more than 50 years. 50, which means they are very old. Mm-hmm. And which means they need major refurbishment. And with this refurbishment, you can improve a lot of things. For instance, you can improve the generation, you can improve the flexibility, you can improve the future operation and maintenance cost structures. You can do a lot of things with the existing hydropower plants. However, the permitting structure even to replace and refurbish hydropower plants is complicated, the first challenge. So this needs to be managed, first thing. The largest potential in Europe is refurbishment right now of the existing power plants, which are big and which are important, but their generation will start declining slowly because of the equipment is getting older and older. However, this refurbishment requires money, upfront money, which hydropower developers are not sure to put in this investment for a few reasons. The first reason is that they don't know whether they will get their money back, because you will invest more to make this hydropower plants more flexible, but whether they will get money out of flexibility, it's a big question mark for them, especially the volume of those products in the European markets are extremely small, and it's not enough for them to make these additional investments. And that's why valuing flexibility and valuing actually renewable flexibility is a quite important topic. The second part, there's a lot of potential pumped hydro storage in Europe, which is needed actually because the VRE shares in some countries are reaching above 50%, and increasingly this will happen. You need long-term storage along with batteries together. There are projects in Spain that have been under development for maybe 10 years. Nothing is being built. So because of the economic case, they need some type of a long-term contract to be able to get long-term revenue visibility and also some investment help in order to make those projects financed. But again, policymakers hit the same wall: social acceptance, mm-hmm. environmental impacts, and so on and so forth. It is a very divided topic. Solar PV is not a divided topic, but wind is becoming a divided topic as well, because of its height and perceived environmental impact. There are larger and larger communities that are opposing to wind power plants as well. So, but without that, how we will reach the climate change goals, it's a different question mark.
I see. And especially in Europe, there's shared bodies of water between countries, so that could be also an issue.
Transboundary issues are less of an issue for Europe because they are friendly with each other, more or less. But in certain parts of the world, it can be used as an energy security issue.
Yeah.
Because countries provide each other this kind of electricity or water.
Mm-hmm.
And these issues have been around in Europe when these plants were being built, because
yeah.
they are built on a 50, 60, 70 years ago, some of them. They're being built upstream, cutting the water downstream, obviously. Get annoyed about that, but these issues are around right now in developing an emerging economy.
So the last question is, what are some future projects or reports planned on hydropower from the IEA?
So we did the hydropower special market report now 2 years ago, I think. I can't remember anymore. 2 years ago, 2021. So this has been a great success, but hydropower market is not as dynamic as
mm-hmm.
solar PV or wind. And we will be basically putting hydropower within several reports, such as market report or tracking clean energy progress or world energy outlook. So it will be part of this flexibility and clean energy discussion. So in that sense, we will continue with that. And then we will see if we will do an update of this. G20 is changing the leadership, which goes from India to Brazil. And Brazil's hydropower priority is very different than other countries. So I'm sure IEA will be doing a lot of work on hydropower in the next years because of the G20 presidency.
That's a good news.
Yeah.
Okay, so thank you for your insightful comments today. It really helped to understand the role of hydro in the clean energy transitions. And the hydro remains a critical source to reach decarbonization while not risking the energy supply. So if you are interested in knowing more about hydro, you can check out the latest publication by Hamey, such as the Renewable Energy Markets Report. And you can also check out the hydropower special market report. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much. One last word to the students who are listening to this, or future students who are listening to this, is that don't be afraid of the name of the class, which involves hydropower, which is not sexy. Many people do not choose this class, but they will regret, because we are not only talking about hydropower. We are talking about the role of storage, flexibility, market design, permitting, social acceptance, politics of hydropower, and policy of hydropower, which will be used in many other renewable technologies in the upcoming future. So that's why the topic is not sexy, but the course is sexier than its topic, I would say.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure, and it can be applied to many other sources, not just hydro.
Exactly. That's the whole purpose of the design of the class that I try to do, so that people can use this in multiple ways. I always say in the first class to all the students, if you can learn how to tackle hydropower issues, you can do with any other technology, because it's the most complicated one.
I'm sure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Siangspo Energy Podcast, recorded and produced in Paris by Yongsan Ong, with the help of Katharina Menke and Julio Altizzi. If you like the podcast, then feel free to leave a rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. If you are an undergraduate student and you're interested in energy, then have a look at the program offered by Siangspo.